Mr. Trouble never hangs around when he hears this mighty sound.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that Mighty Seat is on the way. Yes, sir, when there is a wrong to right, Mighty Seat will join the fight. On the seat or on the land, he gets the situation well in hand.
So though we are in danger, we never despair, 'cause we know that where there's danger, he is there.
He is there, on the land, on the sea, in the air.
Alrighty, this is another Mighty Seek from the road. We're still at the hotel. It's actually only a few hours after our last recording, which I'll probably space these out when I put them on the feed so that, I don't know, buy me some time, I guess. So I don't have to put another podcast together right away. I can kind of, I'll stall on this, so... For us, it's been a couple hours. For you, it's likely to be a week or so, maybe two. In the last podcast, we talked about what goes into... What's the process, among our banter, what's the actual process of doing a security audit? What we're going to talk about this time around is the, let's say, non-technical aspect of doing a security audit. The planning and what happens actually on the job in terms of politics and all that kind of stuff. Part of what I think is useful in discussing this is if you're a budding security auditor and you want to learn ahead of time what you're going to be facing, this can help. Get you kind of prepared for what you're going to be dealing with. And if you're out, if you're on the other end of it and you're actually hiring a, you know, security consultant to come in and do an audit, these are kind of, we'll discuss a little bit about what you really need to do to allow the security audit to be completed successfully. And there's plenty of things you can do to make it more difficult. So I guess that's it. We'll launch into this. I got Joe Ingo with me, and Scott Schefferman's also with us.
Yellow.
Yeah, he's way off in the other end of the room. He's, I think he's
playing around with his little tiny MacBook, or PowerBook, actually.
PowerBook, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
And Joe's sitting here. See, Joe got all excited about podcasting, and...
Well, I've been excited about podcasting, but actually had a chance to actually do one today, so...
Yeah, so he's now all hooked and trying to figure out what he wants to do a podcast. So we'll see if that actually pans out or if it's all talk. But he's been experimenting with GarageBand on his...
MacBook Pro.
Yeah, we need a little theme for that, don't we?
A little soundbite. Well, we could try to find one after the fact and throw it in there.
Like on the Ricky Gervais show, anytime he needs a theme song, he just like screeches it out. So...
Joe will tweak a few things out himself.
Yeah, he's just screaming.
Well, I pretty much guarantee I'll do at least one podcast and then see how it goes from there. I mean, I can't promise that I'll keep going with it, but I will definitely do one, and we'll see how that goes.
You know, it's one of those things that you get hooked, though. You know, I mean, I did the first couple podcasts with a headset mic, And it worked okay. I mean, the podcast sucked, really. I mean, the first couple of, you know, ones, I think I marked on...
Oh, I remember them.
Yeah, on the website, I have the not worth listening to in the title. I've actually...
Well, you sent it to me, like, what, about an hour after that?
Oh, man.
Something like that. Yeah, the quality was pretty poor.
Yeah, it was, and I had no topic at the point. Well, I knew what I was going to do eventually, but those I was just trying to figure out how to... What goes into recording it. And then I ended up getting Cast Blaster. And that really helped me kind of have a tool to, I don't know, it helps me organize. It's there's nothing to it that really makes podcasting easier other than, I mean, let's see, coming up with a topic. It doesn't help you with your content, per se, but it just gives you a nice little tool to take your idea and just go with it. So, and you know, there's plenty of tools. Like he's looking at Joe's looking at GarageBand,
which actually Dan doesn't realize I actually have it running right now.
Oh, are we recording? We're dual recording.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because I wanted to run some tests with the internal mic and just play around GarageBand. This is a perfect opportunity to actually try it out and see how well it works. And plus, I can actually have a timer, see how long we've been doing this for.
Yeah. Okay. Because I have my timer, so I'm always seeing what's going on in Cast Blaster. So yeah, I have.
Oh, in case you missed it. This week's episode is brought to you by Cast Blaster and MacBook Pro.
Well, me and Joe have been doing a lot of work with Podshow, and Cast Blaster is tied to Podshow, and there's a, incestual relationships going on.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I'm hosting this on a on MightySeek.com with the WordPress blog and the PodPress plugin written by yours truly. PodPress.
A plug.
I'm plugging my plug.
If you missed that, also Scott was yelling from the other side of the room. We weren't paying attention to him, though. Anyway.
Well, on this nice mic, the Perception 100, we may hear him over there, and the air conditioner. But we are missing an important person in this podcast.
This is true. We do not have the snore meter.
We do not have the snoring JD. All right. Let's try to get some content useful here. We're already it's almost 7 minutes into this, and we haven't talked about anything useful yet. So, okay.
I think one of the first things that a lot of people don't realize is that biggest problem you're going to have is delays. You know, things are not going to be ready once you get there. You know, no matter how much planning goes into it, no matter how much they say you're going to be ready, or, you know, even on both ends, it's just not going to happen. There's going to be delays, and sometimes you won't even be able to start testing for at least a day or two. And
The delays could start before you even get there. You know, if you've got travel, be prepared. If you don't travel normally and you're traveling to an engagement, be prepared for delays in, weather affects, air travel.
That's an understatement. You're talking to the person who got stuck in the blizzard.
Yeah, you got stuck in, had to spend a couple extra days at the location. But yeah, there's going to be delays. And, you definitely want to plan out as much as you can ahead of time, because if you have no plan, it's just going to be terrible. Which is goes to a lot like, my show about SDLC, Software Development Lifecycle, is that in there, the Software Development Lifecycle is going to happen whether you plan it or not. And you want to plan it as much as possible, because then you can kind of control, to some degree, you can control the situation. Now, in an engagement, if you're one of the consultants that's coming in, you're one of the experts that's going to come in and do the audit, you want to plan out your travel and your schedule, and you want to definitely be talking to the on-site people, your on-site contacts, as much as you can ahead of time so that you can have them ready. But, and then, obviously you have to have your own stuff ready. You have to have your computer and all your tools and everything set up. It's probably, before an engagement, is probably not a good time to do a Windows reinstall and start setting up everything fresh.
Did you actually do that once?
I'm speaking from experience. I am speaking from experience. At one engagement, we got to avoid naming names particularly, but
it was a large corporation.
A large software corporation, yes.
Yeah.
Very large one. I had somewhat of an excuse, because when I got there, on the way there, again, this is perfect. On the way there, on the airplane, somebody spilled water on my laptop.
You telling me about that?
Yeah, and so my monitor got fried, and so I spent a couple days with Dell trying to get a new monitor. Fortunately, I had like the ultimate, their super
care warranty.
Yeah, complete care warranty. And that saved me a number of times. I that trashed that laptop so many times. But in that instance, the monitor got fried from the water attack.
Water attack.
And So I get there, and I have no computer, essentially. And I ended up being able to hook up to an external monitor and use that. But then I got the new monitor, and Windows freaked out on it. And so I ended up doing a reinstall of Windows, like, after the first night of the engagement. And that was just a nightmare. Trying to, you know, you as a security expert and as any kind of, you know, anytime you're dealing with a lot of testing, you have all kinds of little tools that you build up over time. And you really want to have that stuff set up before you start an engagement. Make sure, you know, just be professional. Bring your tools. And, you know, in my case, I have some level of an excuse. But even so, I didn't have all the tools on the machine that I... Even, you know, in that situation, before that, I didn't have all the tools that I needed going into it. And I really learned a lesson in that engagement, is you definitely want to have everything ready. So, there's a lot of times you'll think, in some engagements where you're air-walled, and you have no internet access because you're not allowed on the network. You're by being air-walled, what that means is that you're on, basically on a hub with the server that you're going to be testing against.
And you're blocked.
And you have no other... network connection. So it's just... It's your computer, you know, maybe your team's computer, and the test server, and that's it. There's no other connections. You know, literally, you may be on just one desk.
Yeah. And you've got... In the middle of a room, one desk that they take away from
you. Yeah, you're literally air-walled from anything. So... You know, you may think, oh, I'll just download stuff. I'll hit the internet and I'll download stuff. But in a situation like that, you can't even get online. So you have to have your tools before you get going. Now, one of the tools that we mentioned in the last show where we talked about the tools was Google and having internet access to do searches. And missing that is a, you know, that can really be a detriment. But if you've planned it out and you're experienced, you can still cope with it. And, having some kind of, you know, wireless internet access is helpful as well.
Back at your hotel also.
Yeah.
You got to have some form of connection there, because if you can't get another connection, then...
Yeah, if you have to go off-site to do research, then you go off-site to do research. You know, if you're not allowed to have internet access on-site.
So you got to... Beforehand, also getting a list of all the hot spots in the area, Starbucks. And
yeah, you have to plan that. I remember out in...
it was Connecticut.
Connecticut. We needed to get internet access, and we had problems there. We were basically not allowed on the network, and we had to drive all over the place trying to find a Starbucks. We should have had that information. We should have had that planned out off-site internet access.
Well, thanks to my girlfriend, she actually went to a Starbucks site and got us a nice long list of Starbucks in the area, but there was only one in the area that actually had the hotspot.
Well, yeah, I mean, that town was a... You know, if you're traveling, you have no idea. You know, you could be in a big city, and you'd be okay. But we were in, you know, there was nothing there. I mean, yeah. We went to. I didn't actually even know that there were Starbucks that didn't have wireless access anymore. And
well, you're from California, of course, you're going to think that.
Well, yeah, I got Wi-Fi everywhere. Yeah, I'm in LA, and you know, there's wireless access pretty much anywhere you want to go. But this, we actually went to a Starbucks and they didn't have Wi-Fi access. Yeah. So we actually had to, you know, get on the phone with Joe's girlfriend and find it. So, you know, again, lesson learned. You want to have internet access planned. If, you know, you don't assume that you're going to have internet access. And you may want to ask this when you're setting up for your engagement. Now, they may initially say that you'll have access. And...
I think it's just to say go ahead. To plan that you will never have internet access and you'll be so much better off.
Yeah, now in this engagement we're dealing with, we actually, well, I guess we'll talk a little bit about politics. Initially, everybody wants these audits to be done, or most of the time. The programmers don't. The development team doesn't, because... Often it means more work.
Yeah,
it means more work for them, and they don't necessarily want it. So you'll have those issues around the development team. Now, somebody's hired you. So somebody wants it. Somebody in the corporation or somebody in the organization wants this thing to happen or need to have it happen to fulfill some requirements. And they'll want results so that they feel like they got their money's worth, but then they don't want results because it causes work. So you have this duplicitous relationship with even the person that brings you in to do the audit, you know? In some way, they're not going to be satisfied, or they're not going to be happy either way. If you don't find vulnerabilities, they're going to think that you don't know what you're doing or that it wasn't worth their money. And these things are generally pretty expensive. And if you do find vulnerabilities and they have to go back to their dev team and get things accomplished, unless that's what they wanted. If they really wanted to cause their dev team some work because, you know, they hated them or something, then that may take place. But, so let's just say you initially think you're going to have internet access, and they tell you you're going to have, you know, connection to their network and you can have internet. Things can happen. Things completely out of your control. And I guess, Joe, you can explain what happened here a little bit.
Well, basically, we were working with the... the engagement we're on right now is a company within a company. We're dealing with the company that was actually developing the application. And as far as they were concerned, no problems. We'll have internet access. We'll have, you know, full access to the application. And when we got there, you know, the first couple days, everything was fine. But it started setting off some types of intrusion detection, and their IT staff got pretty upset over it, and the IT staff was a part of the parent company, and the parent company decided that they would remove our access, so they basically came in there and just pulled our Ethernet cables, and we sat there for the rest of the day doing nothing, because we had no connection whatsoever. So for the next couple of days, we had to reorganize things and get a private server set up, a copy of the development machine that we can actually test off. And, you know, it's partially our fault for not, you know, following through to make sure that the parent company, you know, approved of us being on the network and performing these types of tests. But even beyond that, you know, it was also the subsidiary company for not realizing that this was going to be a problem because of the nature of the company. You know, that was going to happen, you know.
Right. Well, in this organization, it's, you know, we could have expected it. And it's another thing we didn't plan for. And something off of this experience, and in other experiences, we've had the same problem where we've been testing and we've DOSed a machine that was up for QA testing and that kind of thing. And again, like we mentioned in the last podcast, is we don't intend to DOS machines. I don't think it's a useful security test. But sometimes it'll happen, and so you may be probing, and you're going to be inserting ugly data into fields, and if other people are using the machine and relying on it, then you're messing with the data, it can make people unhappy. So one thing that would be extremely useful is to, and again, you can do this ahead of time, is to plan for or have them set up a dedicated test environment for this process and not use their existing test environments that are...
Absolutely, because that will slow down their QA testers, because their QA testers can't just bring down the machine for, you know, a patch or anything like that. They have to work on, you know, a specific set schedule, and you have to work around their schedule. You know, there was the job with your laptop, that mm-hmm. particular job. There was a period where they were down for 3 hours because they were upgrading the server, and then a couple days later, the exact same thing happened again. There was one day it happened like 3-4 times in a day, and it will keep happening. It's a lot easier to work off a completely separate, dedicated machine that will not affect their testing, and it won't affect your testing.
Yeah, ideally you're not entirely airwalled as well. If you are, then you have to cope with it. But it's really useful to have a dedicated server environment for this process, so that it really gives you more liberty to really do whatever you want with the machine and really attack it, you know, with everything you've got. One of the other things that you want to plan, other than, oh, hold on, we got to get a, you know, in the last podcast we had to remedy the fact that nobody had been drinking and we were so wacky, but now actually we're more professional here. And Joe's drinking.
Yeah.
Well, I'm drinking soda.
The problem the whole time was the sobriety factor.
Oh, it was sobriety that was making us all goofy.
Well, see, I was trying to be real quiet, get up from the chair, turn around, open the refrigerator, and it just made too much noise. So, yes, I'm drinking a beer right now.
I had to bust you.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, to top it all off, we just got back from Outback. Well, of course, you go to Outback, you have to have a beer, you know, obviously, so.
Obviously. Yeah. All right, so what was I saying?
Something about beer.
okay, Scott.
Hey, Scott, if you're going to really talk, why don't you come over here and stop screwing around with the laptop?
See, he's just gonna pipe in.
Yeah, he's all just going to throw in little comments here and there.
And I know who knows if that...
Hotel's network security is up
to par. Oh, okay. Yeah, see, you know... Okay. So, the... so, you definitely want to have that dedicated machine so that you can really do whatever you want in terms of your testing. That was also reminding me, you want to have some clear definitions in place and boundaries in place in a number of ways. If you're doing application security testing, a lot of the stuff that we've talked about can also apply to a network security assessment, but you know, there's a big difference, I had a podcast about this, about the difference between web application security testing and network security testing. And so
we were actually going to be doing that podcast last week, but...
Yeah, we were actually trying Skype. We tried to Skype this. Me and Joe were going to do this together, and I could not figure out how to Skype record. And I mentioned that as well, and somebody pinged me with some... Or they had a comment on the blog. Actually, somebody mentioned how one... They mentioned a tool that can do it.
Oh, cool.
But it requires Outlook. And it
requires Outlook?
Yeah, it's called Skype Look or something like that. Skype.
MacBook Pro.
So
I knew that was going to be the answer. I mean, come on.
It's true. There, people have already, you know, it's well done on Apple already. But we were going to podcast that together. I ended up just doing it on my own. Because I was impatient, and I can't use Skype Look because, you know, I'm a security guy, and as such, I just couldn't stomach using Outlook. So that's the entry point for a huge number of the viruses.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's just worms and viruses love Outlook. So I don't use that, and so I can't use Skype Look. But it does look like a really good tool, and I heard a really good podcast by a buddy of mine, and I can't think of his name at the moment, but he's actually the one that commented on the blog. He did a podcast with the makers of Skype Look. I probably have that name wrong, and I'm butchering it, but whatever. There's a link to it on my site in the comments. And I'll try to put another link somewhere else because it does look like a cool tool. But so anyway, I did a podcast about the differences, and so part of that is boundaries. So if you're doing application security testing, you want to make it clear that you're not going to be testing the server for vulnerabilities and testing the operating system and platform. You know, that's not part of it. You're not going to be doing port scans against the machine and all that kind of stuff. That's outside of the boundary of what your requirements are. So you want to have clearly defined requirements before you enter the engagement so that, you know, if you don't have clearly defined requirements, then in all likelihood, the customer is not going to be satisfied. And as a customer, you're going to be frustrated because you're going to envision things that are going to happen that aren't going to happen. And so you're just kind of setting up the whole thing for some degree of failure.
Well, it's also like another job that we did. It was actually right before the Connecticut job. The company that we were dealing with, they had the previous year's auditor come in, and they found a ton of cross-site scripting attacks when the person who hired them said, you know, we're not concerned about, you know, cross-site scripting because of the fact that we're in a, you know, private environment. You know, I disagree with that, but, you know, that's what the customer wanted. So... Where was I going with that?
So
I mean, that wasn't a primary focus. So if we found one, okay, we would report it all, obviously. But we're not going to spend all of our time working on that. I mean, it really comes down to what the customer really needs and what they want. You know, I mean, if there's a specific part of the application that they need, you know, tested more heavily, then yeah, spend all your time in there. But that's also a very good thing to find out. If there's a specific section that they're very nervous about or doesn't work, or you know, they're nervous about it, you know, or that's the most crucial aspect of it.
Yeah, and so even within in that job, we were web app security testing, but within the web app security testing, they had basically X'd out a couple of the attack vectors.
Yeah.
So, and they didn't want those. So, yeah, that you definitely, you know, part of the requirements. And you don't want to waste your time, because you could end up spending 2 days, you know, following down all these cool cross-site scripting attacks, and then they say, we don't really care about cross-site scripting. And then you've just completely wasted time.
I mean, cross-site scripting is a pretty rare thing. They're going to say they don't
watch
it.
We can argue that, and you would want to spend some time talking to them about it. But if they're fully convinced, you know, they're the one paying you to do the job, you would want to mention it in your report, because you want to have, you know, you want to be complete, and you want to do a professional job, and you can mention it. And what you'd probably want to do is mention, we found a bunch of cross-site scripting vulnerabilities. Maybe you have a very quick, brief list of them, and then indicate, you know, however, we didn't fully, you know, test out or fully chase down all the issues, because this is not of interest, you know, and not of a concern to said organization. So, you know, having that clearly defined is good, or really necessary.
Yeah.
What was the other thing? Now I've lost track. I had a list of things in my head.
The beer threw it off.
Yeah.
See, we need Scott over here to throw in the, you know, the commentary every once in a while, so then we can get ourselves back on track.
Yeah, what was the other... What's another thing that would be useful to have planned ahead of time? Oh, okay.
Access. Physical access.
Yes, physical access.
This is true. Some companies will require some form of access cards or SSL
or escorts
escorts, exactly.
Any kind of, yeah, you got, you know.
Credentials is actually a very, very big one.
That's
Make sure
right.
that you have accounts created on those, you know, demo boxes, because that will slow you down. Seems like a simple concept. Create an account. Create 5 accounts, but that could turn out to be quite a bit, depending on their politics.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff around this that you know, ideally you have dealt with ahead of time, but, you know, these things are going to come up. You know, and the other thing, this is another one I was trying to, this is what I forgot, is in terms of the boundaries, part of the boundaries really needs to be defined, that if there's something, you know, the consultant is going to have the consultant's going to have a certain amount of time allotted to a project, to coming in and doing your audit. And as a consultant, you need to be flexible. Things are going to happen. There's going to be delays, and you've got to be somewhat prepared for them. But also as a customer, you know, if the delays are caused by your end, then there needs to be some, you know, and this needs to be put into the project and the scope and all that kind of stuff and the agreement, is that, you know, if your app is not available for testing and, you know, while the team's there, then, you know, you may not get your app tested. And, you know, but the security consultant was there willing to do the job, and you don't have the app available for them, you know, from where I see things, that's, you know, that's on you, and you end up losing out. So what I want to stress in that is that you need to have your environments ready for the security team. Again, having a dedicated server environment for them, you know, having the test environment, you know, individually set up for this process allows you to, or protects you from being the impediment to having a successful project. You know, if the security team can't get their job done and they've had access and that's their problem, then, you know, that's going to be on them. But as a customer, you want to try to avoid that, because really, you know, if you're hiring in a team, there's probably a reason for it. So, you know, you're the one that's got some pressure for you to spend the money to have this done. Exactly. So you want to have, you know, you want to have the team there and be able to get a job done successfully.
Another thing to consider is hours of operation. You know, certain buildings might, you know, lock down after a certain time, and, you know, there's no more access to the building. So if you get poor cell phone reception, then you might have to go outside to make a phone call or whatever. And if you can't get back in the building and your laptop's still in there and it's, you know, everybody's gone, you have to plan for that kind of...
Yeah,
you kind of have to plan for that a little bit. You know, it's also, it would be a good idea to find out beforehand what the hours of operation are. You know, what is the earliest you can get there? What is the latest? It also works out good if you have to really cram out the job towards the end of the week because you're just running out of time and you have to put in longer hours, but you might not be able to. Some companies just, they don't want you there after a certain period of time, and they don't want you there before a certain period of time.
Right, and for the consultants, you know, geeks have odd hours.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to, you know, I don't know, a lot of the geeks that I deal with tend to be up very late, you know, and likewise sleep in, and if you're in the middle of an engagement, you need to be working the hours that the customer has available for you to be on premises or have access to the site or whatever. So you've got to adjust your schedule around the customer.
Well, just on a side note, how many times have you called to wake me up in the morning because I'm still sleeping? I work, even though I'm in New Jersey, I work based off of Pacific time for the most part. But even then, it's kind of stretching it.
Yeah, you're in Hawaii time or something. I don't know.
Yeah, actually, Hawaii time is a little bit more accurate.
Yeah, because it's like 9 o'clock my time and I'm still waking you up. So.
Well, sometimes you're calling me at noon your time. You're like, all right, dude, you've gone a little too far.
Yeah, so, you know, getting your body clock in sync with the customer's time is really important so that you can, as a consultant, you can get the job done and get it done well. You know, you don't want to be, ideally, I mean, okay, granted, it's, what, midnight now, and yeah, we're supposed to be in there by 7 or something like that.
Yeah.
So we should technically be going to bed soon.
Oh, sure, of course, but, you know, we ain't going to.
Yeah. But, you know, you got to be alert when you get there and focused and get things accomplished.
Yeah, you especially know, if you're traveling across the country, you want to take time zones into account, and not just for the actual time difference, but if you're a night owl and you're traveling from New Jersey to California, it's no big deal, but if you're going the other way around, ooh, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
So that's why I always try to fly out the night before, this way I can get a nice good night's sleep and then go in fresh, ready to go in the morning.
Yeah, definitely plan for the body clock syncing.
That's kind of a given, but, you know, just...
Well, you know, if you're not thinking about it, you know, you're, geeks just, you know, they get into their cycles.
Yeah.
And, you know, but anyway. Let's see, what other kind of stuff? Definitely want to plan out the documentation early. You know, as you're doing the job and you're going through, you're collecting notes, but... Really, before you start the job, you ought to have some template for how you're going to deliver the your results. You're going to, you know, potentially you'd be using an automated tool like NTO Spider, where it's going to have its results, and then you may have to supplement those results or offer a handwritten recap, which would include the automated results plus the human results. So, you know. You ideally don't want to be doing that, trying to cram in documentation and formatting the whole deal at the end. You want to have really good templates ahead of time. Sometimes it's hard to do if you've not done an engagement before. Sometimes you don't know what to expect. And maybe I should post some example engagement report. I'll think about that and I'll see if I can do something like that.
I'm sure your clients will appreciate that.
Well, obviously, I'll have to change...
Yeah, we'll have to actually remove...
Sanitize it.
Yeah, I'll sanitize and kind of make a, you know, kind of cobble together from various engagements to kind of create a sampling. But documentation, for me, is probably one of the hardest parts of an engagement because I hate doing documentation. You know, I'm a developer, and developers don't write documentation. You know, it's just, you know, it seems to be some... I don't know. It's some genetic issue. You know, if you got the gene for doing development, You don't have the gene for documentation.
Exactly, but if you put it off towards the end of the week, you're going to regret it like you would not believe.
Yeah, even having a format ahead of time helps you as you're going through. Because as you're going through, you'll know what data you need to save, what notes you need to take. If you know, okay, I'm going to need to know what app this is, I need to know what page it was, what the input originally was, what it was after I did the attack, and what that created, and how to see, you know, that this is actually a problem. Because what you have to remember is, you're as a consultant and as a customer, the auditors are trying to find the problems. But you're not just trying to find, you know, the customer doesn't want to just know what the problems are. They want a clue of how to fix it. So
That could be a major, major, major thing.
Yeah, so you need to have in there, in your notes, you need to have replication processes. So you need to be able to tell the customer how to replicate this problem.
Screenshots.
Screenshots are great. So yeah, you know, having format ahead of time really helps you know what to collect when you find a vulnerability. So as you find the vulnerability, you go, okay, I need to fill, you know, I need this, 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 and this. You got your little checklist. Then you don't, you know, otherwise you'll say, I found this problem. And you'll take a quick note. You'll jot down some little, you know, enter this data into this field. And it's something that you'll understand. And then, you know, 3 days later or a week later, when you go back to do your documentation, you forget. You know, you think, oh, this is the coolest vulnerability I've ever found, and I'm going to remember every last detail of this. You know, it's like like having a child, and you remember the birth, but it's not, and you forget.
You forget very easily. I mean, things that we tested yesterday, we were discussing it earlier, you know, this afternoon, and we couldn't remember
for
life.
Yeah, was it a boy or was it a girl? You just can't even remember.
No, Scott just came over. Wow, this is shocking.
Yeah, he's 15 feet closer now.
Well, yeah.
What I wanted to point out with this as well is the flip side of that is when you're doing the reporting is also to never assume that your client will understand the reason why the finding is important. It's really important to use the right kind of language and put it in layman's terms. Like, what is literally the impact of this finding, even for someone who doesn't even understand anything about application development? Why do they care? Start off high level on each and every finding, not just in your executive summary, in terms of showing why this is an important finding and what the impact is. Whether the impact is high or the impact is trivial.
Yeah, a scoring scheme.
Yeah,
exactly. Is definitely useful. Automated tools like NTO Spider have their own.
That's true.
And that may be a guideline for the rest of what you're going to do. But yeah, definitely have a scoring mechanism and having some kind of title or blurb that is a very quick, you know, I don't know how many times today Joe says, how would you, you know, give me a 5-word way to describe this, you know, and that's important. Having,
yeah,
you know,
some of those were a little bit unique. Well, 3 out of 4 of them were kind of unique, but
yeah, but coming up with that blurb, like you say, is really important because it does help the user as they're glancing through your results to, you know, catch on and you know.
Yeah, well, and you know, we take the words cross-site scripting vulnerability for granted, so to speak, because we know what it does, and we, in the process of testing for it, you know what it does. But the client and the client's heard of cross-site scripting before, and they might even run an automated tool, and they've had the tool say, hey, you might be vulnerable to XSS, and they might hear it as a buzzword, and they might have even read like an article on Slashdot about it or something.
Right.
But do they really understand what the impact is? What an evil hacker could do with it? Why it's important to them?
There's the phone call.
Yeah, that's not actually a Futurama episode running. That's actually Joe's cell phone ringtone. So.
Yeah, that's a good ringtone.
Yeah,
it's the future. Excuse me, it's the Futurama theme song.
That's right. So yeah, just basically, don't assume your client understands any of what these attacks are or why they're important to them.
Yeah, so coming up with, and this is also a prep thing, is, you know, basically, when you're doing web app testing, or actually even network vulnerability testing, whatever type of testing you are doing, you're generally going to know the large categories, right? If you're doing web app security testing, you're going to be looking for cross-site scripting problems, you're going to be looking for SQL injection problems, You're going to be looking for resource finding. You know, you're basically going to have these categories of things that you're going to be looking for. And so having a prepared description and recommendation for those larger categories, you know, going into the job is really helpful.
It's a time saver, too. I mean, you do more than one job. You shouldn't have to recreate the wheel describing why cross-site scripting is important. I mean, you have a template, like you're saying.
Right. So, you know, going in ahead of time with this documentation, you know, it saves time. It allows you to, as you find problems, know what data you need to collect about that given problem. And then, you know, already having, like you say, the description and recommendation prepared. You know, you'll have to tailor it to the specific problem, but it's much easier to tailor some data than trying to rewrite everything, you know, from scratch every time.
And it's also important to note that, you know, in your documentation, you should, you know, not treat them as if they're a baby, but, you know, don't treat them as if they know what you're talking about, because the person who might be accepting that report, the person who hired you, might just be some sort of, you know, general upper management. The only thing he does is just, you know, hire and, you know, do whatever he does, you know. And he might absolutely know nothing about the development process or the testing process. He was just told by somebody else, get somebody in to test it, and, you know, we'll see what happens. And but he's still got to review that report.
Yeah. Actually, Joe, that reminds me of another thing that I think you touched on earlier already, and Dan, was the politics of the situation. But one of the subtleties of the politics of your environment is knowing what the hot button for why you're there in the first place. What was it, an audit? Was it are they just trying to do things right and build a secure app from the first time around? Were they hacked? Was there an event to what people call security events?
Yeah, that's a great point.
And then also,
what was the jump point that made them want
right.
to do this?
And then who hired you in? Was it, you know, the financial people? Was it the board of a company, let's say a public company, or was it a third party audit agency, or was it the inspector general if you're talking about, let's say, a DOD or government organization? You know, because in the environment you're in, you know, the people that you might have to ask for the keys for the application might not want to give them to you, and they might throw you some funky code, or they might change the application that you get to test from the one that's actually up in production. You just don't know what you're going to get into unless you understand the surrounding circumstances and the subtleties of the politics of the situation and what the hot button was for why you're
right.
in there.
And it can help you adjust your delivery, because if you are brought in by upper management, let's say, you know, the CEO or whatever, the, you know, an executive, you know, he's hearing all these issues on the news, and he feels like, you know, I better protect my company. He has no clue, okay? In general, he has no clue about the specific issues. So you got to tailor, in that environment, you're going to have to, very much so, and you should do it anyway, but have a really clear executive summary format.
Yeah, I mean, basically, look, on a scale of 1 to 10, sir, ma'am, your application security ranks about a 3 or a 4 for some very important reasons, and you know that's just giving you the high level. But yeah,
you need the happy face, frowny face report.
Red light, green light, you know, yellow light kind
yeah.
of thing. Right?
So you know, and so you may have to, you know, you may be required to boil it down to that, and then because this person is going to then deliver it to their technical people they trust, you want to have the technical details to back up your results, because otherwise you're going to look foolish. If you say, oh, okay, I've got this executive or the CFO or whatever that's brought me in, all I need to do is deliver them the happy face, frowny face
report. Or sell them a bunch of FUD.
Right, yeah, you give them a bunch of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and you give them that result. The thing that you may, you know, not realize is they're going to immediately turn to their technical people and hand it off, and they're going to say you're full of crap if they don't have the technical data behind it. So you're going to really have to layer your resulting documentation, you know, depending on the customer. Now,
also, it might be useful to split that documentation up into different categories. This is for the DBA. This is for the application developers. This is for the server administrator. And, you know, hey, this might be for the network administrator, depending on the scope of your actual engagement.
Right, and this is something, again, automated tools, or at least NTO Spider, we've specifically designed the reporting around this whole thing, is we have, you know, we have the executive level support, then you have the you'll have the executive summary, then you'll have a technical summary, you know, and then you'll have, yeah, and then you'll have the categories, the classes, the application, the database, and the server administrator reports, and that actually goes into the actual detail and actually has the descriptions and recommendations.
Right, because in a larger organization, the guy who takes care of the physical box in the server and taking care of patching Microsoft, 2000 or 2003 or whatever, is not the same person who's in charge, obviously, of developing the application and securing the application.
Yeah, totally different groups, and then you'll have a separate group that's the database administrators, and I've talked about this in other podcasts, but, you know, in certain environments, the database administrator has a lot of information about being able to manage the database, but they've really handed the keys of the kingdom off to the web application developer by basically giving them an account that has full access to the given database they're using, and then they do everything else. So a lot of times the person that's going to fix it is the application developer. But if you're able to provide data or some kind of document that can be delivered to the database administrator to say, hey, I know you're not the one doing this.
Yes.
But the application developer is creating SQL problems, causing vulnerabilities in your database. You know, having something that can be handed to the database administrator that alerts them to the problem really allows them to take some ownership and to take and have some power into inserting themselves back into the development process. And I know I've talked about this in other podcasts. I've had some specifically dedicated to this issue. It's really important. You know, the database administrator, if he can reinsert himself back into the process, convert things to stored procedures, and help secure the process, you know, again, initially it's not direct actionable items, but by informing them, you can allow them to come into the process.
Well, and that, you know, a very important side note to that same topic is that ultimately, when it comes time to deliver your findings or report, whether that's in an overhead presentation or just a written report, no matter what the medium is, you try to make everybody a winner, so to speak. Look, you know, this might be a process problem rather than an individual. You try not to point out individuals that have made mistakes, or you know, even department positions that have made mistakes. At the same time, you have to remember where your loyalties are, and you have to remember who's paying your paycheck as a consultant. Who is your exact client? Who's, you know, because you might make friends with the developers as you're working with them. Mm-hmm. And they might think you're the coolest thing in the world, and you might have even shown them a few tricks or two on application security when they're watching over your shoulder. But at the end of the day, if their manager is the person who hired you, or their board, or a third-party audit agency, you have to remember to keep things very objective in your reporting. You know, if you're asked a direct question, you have to answer directly, you know, where is the problem coming from, or why do we have these problems? If you get that kind of question, just be ready to answer it before you get into the meeting without, you know, calling names, but at the same time shooting straight. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, and as a customer, you have to understand this as well, is that you know, depending on who you are in the organization, you know, the consultant's going to have, you know, is going to be forced into kind of behaving in a different way depending on who you are and what your position is and what your requirements of them are. And that could affect the job a little bit. We've had other jobs where, and as we mentioned this in the last recording a couple hours ago for us and maybe a week later for you, or a week earlier for you, the application where we were brought in and we couldn't find any vulnerabilities. In that job, we were actually hired by the security guy, and he's extremely technical. So, you know, we weren't really required to do a executive summary kind of, you know, documentation.
Right.
He wanted the technical details. And this is actually a good point, and this is part of the documentation process, is documenting what you tried to do.
Yes, absolutely. Glad you remembered that.
Yeah, and that's, again, having that pre-formatted document, as you're trying things, you're recording what it is you did attempt.
Even if it's a negative result.
Yeah, if you failed, fine. But having that trail, again, this is beneficial for the consultant, because he could say, hey, look, here's my processes that I went through, and I couldn't find vulnerabilities. If you have documented all along the way what you try, where you attempted, I tried cross-site scripting here, I tried SQL there. If you have all that trail, that helps you. And as a customer, you can really see what they've done, what they tried, and what failed. So you can, when you go back to your team to fix the problems that are found, if some are found, then, you know, you can kind of do the, pat on the back, whack on the chin, kind of thing, where you go, you guys are doing a great job with SQL injection, but you're having a whole bunch of cross-site scripting problems. You have more of a full picture, and that really goes to having the knowledge ahead of time of what you're going to deliver. So having that prepared document structure, that kind of sets you up for knowing what you're going to be doing.
Right. Yeah. Well, the other thing is, even on a more detailed level, you might step up to an application, and within 10 seconds, literally, you can potentially find a cross-site scripting vulnerability and validate it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you might spend 2 or 3 hours Googling for some obscure, vulnerability or approach, or like we were doing with, with Active State?
View State,
right. I mean, you might spend a long time doing that and not get any results out of it, but you went down the rabbit hole as deep as it could go so that you made sure you covered that. It might take you 3 hours to do that, and the application developer seeing your report might not understand that it took you 3 hours to do that, and they might even ask you about it. Look, you guys found all these vulnerabilities right away, but what did you do this afternoon?
Right.
Well, we didn't find anything, and this is why. Because you remembered the document. If you don't remember it, you won't remember what you did yesterday.
Right. Yeah, it's a totally important issue. And there's been a number of times where we haven't done it, and we've had to sit down, and if you're on your own or if you're part of a team, you've got to sit down and then brainstorm and, what did we try? What did we test? And you're going to miss stuff. And you're not going to get credit for the things that you actually did do. And so you want to keep track. And as a customer, you want to know what it is they tried, because the things that weren't successful that you can go back to your team with and know that you're doing a good job to, often, it's rare that the actual top boss in an organization is the one hiring the security team. So you could go back to your boss, if you're in middle management somewhere, you can go back to your boss and say, hey, I got this security team in. They tested all these things, and they couldn't find a problem. They did find a few weaknesses. You can kind of justify the time your team has spent that, and the things they've done well, and then also have, the documentation on the things that they haven't done well.
Right.
And so you're not just getting trashed. You're having some of the good and bad,
Right. You're able to pat yourself on the back a little bit sometimes, too.
Yeah. What else? You have anything else that you keep thinking
about? If a person can walk away taking notes from this podcast alone,
right?
I mean, it's that this is pretty much an hour and whatever of time that it's been. That it's pretty jam packed full of really valuable.
Yeah, this
really
one
valuable information, some good insider stuff, and some good stuff to take home with you and keep in your back pocket.
Another tip of advice is if you're doing a podcast, beer is not a good idea.
Yeah, Joe got a little quiet towards the end.
Well, it's more along the lines of I was sitting here, I was like, okay, when's this going to end? I got to go to the bathroom. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to the bathroom.
Yeah, Joe's doing the pee-pee dance in the middle of our podcast.
Well, plus I just realized that my domain that I registered for my podcast, which is actually a secret name right now, because I'm not sure if I'm going with the name yet, but... At any rate, it's slightly available now, so I was just sort of setting that up as we're going through this.
Right. So yeah, Joe's getting distracted. Not offering a lot here.
Yeah.
Can't tell if it's the Lush or the.
I'm minimizing.
Probably
have
three geeks all with ADHD trying to do a podcast together.
Yeah, exactly. Well, another problem was that I had my MacBook Pro sitting on the chair, and I was just kind of glancing over every once in a while because I'm actually recording this on GarageBand right now just because I want to just screw around with it, have an actual podcast to kind of chop it up and just see how it works because I need to learn GarageBand. But then Scott walked over and took the seat, so now the laptop is actually right next to me, and it's too tempting.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, so I'm going to have to actually... I do all my post-production in an application called GoldWave. Which GoldWave is awesome. GoldWave is a very good tool Yeah, another plug here. It is a fantastic tool. I've really enjoyed it. If you've ever listened to this podcast and you have not noticed that the theme song in the very beginning is modified. It does not say Mighty Mouse. It says Mighty Seek. And I did all of that in Gold Wave.
I still don't know how you actually pulled that off.
Yeah, you know,
I remember when you called me up and you were like, dude, download this MP3. I'm like, okay. And I'm listening to it. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, wait a minute. How the hell did you do that?
Yeah. Well, I've had a couple listeners email me or, you know, chat me at some point. They've heard three or four podcasts, and then they noticed it. They hadn't even noticed it, you know. and I take that as a compliment that it was so well blended in there that they didn't even notice that it had been modified at all, you know, and that's cool. But anyway, we'll go post production, and then I'll show you some of the things that you can do in GarageBand that kind of compares to what I'm doing, and we'll have to sync up because I haven't used GarageBand, so.
Yeah, you're about ready to hear that song again as we wrap up. So
yeah,
keep your ears tuned.
Anyway, you know, I hope we've expressed a little bit about what goes into the engagement, both in the actual job and in the geeks hanging out together and being silly and, you know, and having fun with it. Security audits can be fun. Not the actual audit generally. It is extremely tedious and extremely boring. I don't think we've expressed how tedious and boring the actual
work is.
That's why I said coffee is your best friend. Make sure you have a gigantic mug of it.
Yeah, and
we'll need it.
And you have a good sense of humor, and ideally you have a team of people that get along.
That also have a sense of humor.
Yeah, that's part of the planning, is having a group of people that can deal with each other. And, you know, you guys have been working together on these engagements a little too long. You're getting a little, you know, you got the old married couple thing going on here. So, but it's part of the planning, I think, you know, that goes into it, is getting a team that works together well and knows how to, you know, throw tasks off. And another thing, and I know this is getting extremely long here, but an important aspect of having, an important reason for having a team brought in to do it rather than just an individual, is that, you know, I'll start digging into something and I'll get frustrated because I can't think of what to do with it. And having a team, you know, somebody else that you can hand off the thing and say, hey, you know what, can you mess with this for a little while? Get that fresh idea, you know, get somebody fresh looking at the problem. Now, he may be frustrated with an issue, and you can trade off what you're testing. So having that team dynamic is extremely useful.
I'd rather have two people for 5 days and one person for 10 days any day as a customer.
Absolutely. It totally makes a difference. You know, you don't want a huge team because that'll get ridiculous.
Well, yeah,
but
obviously.
I think what we've mostly had 2 to 4 people.
Yeah, and
most.
You can break things off
about
into
that.
Tasks. You know,
well, the largest was 8 to 10.
Yeah, but see, there was several applications, so they broke down into mini teams anyway.
No, I was talking about the one. We're mentioning the large software company earlier.
Right.
There was 8 people for that one.
We were all working on the one? Well, no, you were, maybe.
You know what, actually, I stand corrected, because I actually went out there to be Dan's replacement, because he had things that he had to do. I don't know what he had to do, but whatever.
I don't like traveling.
Yeah, well, okay. I was trying to be nice about it, but yeah, he hates traveling, so that's why I end up doing all of it.
Odds are 5-1, by the way, that Dan cuts his part out of post-production.
Well, now I can't. Or
yeah, exactly. And, oh,
damn,
no,
you.
This entire topic is just going to be cut down, you know. We're going to go from like 50... See, here we go. 57 minutes. That's where we're at right now. Or,
no, 58 and some.
58 and some, okay. Goodness, you know what? I actually started recording before he started recording.
Better hit that Mighty Seek tune before 60 minutes is up.
Yeah, man. I'm going to have some bandwidth issues soon. All right. Anyway, but yeah, it's important to have a good team that works together and get along. And anyway, talk to you guys later.
Save the day. That means that Mighty Seed is on the way.